The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network. Welcome to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. Here are Dan Rusinowski and Drew Remenda.
It's all set. The Stanley Cup Final is a rematch from last season. The Florida Panthers from the Eastern Conference against the Edmonton Oilers in the Western Conference. I can't say I'm totally surprised, Drew, the way things were transpiring in the playoffs, but there's a little bit of disappointment with me, too. I kind of thought that some of the other teams that fell by the wayside really had an opportunity to beat these two clubs, but in the bottom line, the final analysis, the best teams did win in advance.
Yeah, 100%, Danny. As the playoffs were going on, the two teams that were starting to really assert their dominance, show that they have their game, show that they understood what it takes to win in the playoffs, getting the performances they needed from their top players, but also from their depth, really showed that the Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers are the two best teams. I'm with you, though. I'm disappointed. I thought maybe we'd see something more from Carolina. I really thought we'd see more from Dallas. I thought that the Vegas Golden Knights were a team and the Colorado Avalanche were teams that could compete, as also were the Winnipeg Jets. But that's the playoffs, right?
I thought the Los Angeles Kings were the team that was going to be the upset club, and they really had Edmonton where they wanted them. But unfortunately, things went the other way, and that prevent defense just prevents victories.
Yep, you're 100% correct there, without a doubt. And that you'll go back to that critical challenge on a goal that had no business being challenged whatsoever, that I think was the catalyst that started the downfall of the Los Angeles Kings. If you bring up a great team on the Los Angeles Kings, we all thought this could be the year the Kings beat the Oilers.
Well, we'll get to another decision in recent games that also is a matter of discussion as we head into the final. But first, let's talk about the Carolina Hurricanes and the Florida Panthers. It seemed to me, Drew, that the Florida Panthers got better each and every game that they played. Carolina was kind of static. They had some good things happen to them, but unfortunately, they just couldn't control the ice. And then Sergei Bobrovsky came up with some big saves when need be, and Freddie Anderson had a falter or two. And Kochetkov came in. They ended up getting the one win. But bottom line is, it all came down to Carter Verhaeghe, a guy that knows exactly how to win a Stanley Cup. And here he is with a critical play from Alexander Barkov.
Barkov along the right boards, down to the corner, then back behind the net with Orlov all over. And Barkov breaks free to the front of the net, backhand feed. Verhaeghe, and he scores! And the Panthers take a 4-3 lead with 7:39 to go in the third. The Panthers are back in front. Carter Verhaeghe upstairs. What a pass from Barkov. And the Panthers once again in front here in Raleigh.
That was an unbelievable play by Barkov to get the pass over there and actually to think to do it. But I'm more amazed by his body position and the way that he powered in the corner and totally controlled the puck and bought time to allow Verhaeghe to get into a position. And then he took a look, and he was behind the net when he made the move out, and he decided to send that pass really dangerously across the crease. That could have really been a disaster if it failed, but it was right on the tape, and it was perfect.
You bring up a great point. See, you don't need a color commentator at all when you're broadcasting games. You can do it by yourself. The play coming into the zone and holding off Orlov was tremendous. Cuts back and then dances between two defenders for a beautiful pass. Verhaeghe is the man, right? I mean, Verhaeghe is the guy when it comes down to elimination games. Talk about Justin Williams back in the day, who works for the Carolina Hurricanes now, as Mr. Game 7. Well, Mr. Elimination is definitely Carter Verhaeghe. He took the time, got it upstairs, beautiful shot, but you're absolutely right. Barkov made the entire play happen.
Well, he did. And then right after that, Sam Bennett put it away to make it 5-3.
Sam Reinhart to Barkov, and he'll rattle one out of the zone. Bennett fresh off serving the penalty, races to the offensive end, has the Barkov up front. He scores! There's an empty netter for Sam Bennett. Fresh off serving the penalty. And the Panthers take a 5-3 lead with 53.4 seconds to go here in Game 5. The Panthers are less than a minute away from moving on to the Cup Final.
Doug Plagans with the call on Florida Radio. And, Drew, by that point, it was all over but the shouting. And what a victory for the Florida Panthers to get back to the Stanley Cup Final, by the way, 3 years in a row, 3 years straight for Paul Maurice's team. To me, that's incredible.
Florida teams have been in the Stanley Cup Final the last 6 years. Tampa, 3 years in a row. Florida, 3 years in a row. It's tremendous how hockey has grown in Florida, but it's also tremendous how hockey has grown in California and everywhere that were so-called non-traditional markets. That penalty kill was big before when Sam Bennett was in the box. Big penalty kill, really well executed. Your guy, Sergei Bobrovsky, did a great job. And they were in total control by that point. Even though they were a man down, they were in total control. And it is amazing when you look at the Florida Panthers. I don't care what anybody says. When you look at that team, the way they play, their simple game, their straight-ahead game, is a thing of beauty.
Well, it is. And the other part of it is that whenever challenged, you know, they just respond so perfectly. And it was really tough for Carolina to even have any answers for that. But getting back to that play that was made by Barkov toward the end of the game, it was just sort of a signature play for his career. Paul Maurice, the head coach of the Florida Panthers, talked about that. And here's what he said.
So there's the beauty of Sasha Barkov. He has that ability, but he doesn't try that all the time, right? He's not forcing that part of the game. So he's not, hey, I'm going to try these moves and do this, and if it goes bad, oh well. It's not about picking your spots. He can sense when it's the right time to try something, right? So for you guys, the overtime goal against St. Louis in the regular season. If you get a chance to watch that one, watch that one. And that, and what's important about it is that he'd been on the ice forever. He's not an ice hog. He's not floating. He's working. He's got to get off the ice, and then something happened, and he just dominated two players into an incredible play and sent the back of our net. So that, if you're a YouTuber, there's some background there.
And here's what Paul Maurice said about going to the Stanley Cup Final for three consecutive years.
Nobody cares. I'll tell you a story that's impacted me. Roberto Luongo is getting inducted into the Vancouver Canucks Hall of Fame, the Ring of Honor. It's a brilliant celebration. It's not short. So at some part, I look up and Pat Quinn is on that. And I'm looking at Pat Quinn's picture, and I'm coaching the Carolina Hurricanes in 2002, and it's the conference final. And we ended up winning. It's the first one that we get into. And I'm nervous before the game because we'd lost two games before, and it doesn't matter if you've won or lost or how long your career's been. If you lose a couple, you're edgy, right? I look up, and I'm thinking, Pat Quinn doesn't care. He doesn't care right now whether we win or lose this game. And that has never left me. So I try to have a little, nobody cares. I got a really good bunch of men in that room, and I've had more fun in the last three. I've learned more about life and hockey in the last 3 years from these players than I could ever possibly imagined. It has been life-altering working with these men. And I'm specific with my words. There's no hyperbole to them. It has absolutely been life-altering coming to the rink working with these men.
You know, Drew, when you're a coach and you've just gone through the battle of a Stanley Cup playoff series and you've got all those emotions, you're celebrating with your coaches, your players, and you walk out into that media room, you have to really be composed to put together the proper words to talk about something. And I think Paul Maurice might be the best of all time at it.
100%. He, and we've noticed it too over the years, how he has become the go-to guy to listen to, because he does choose his words carefully. He doesn't use hyperbole. He's funny. He's very dry sense of humor. He's quick-witted. But the one thing that you noticed, and we've certainly noticed from when he got to Florida, but even in the Winnipeg days, the gratitude he has to his players, the respect he has, the love, and that's not an exaggeration, the love he has for the gentleman that he coaches in his room. That's what always strikes me, Danny. I don't know about you, but that's what hits me more than anything.
Exactly. I mean, he is a consummate professional. He has already handled the severe pressures of Toronto. I don't think that's the easiest place to coach in any place in the NHL. So this is kind of a nice walk, stroll through the park for him at this point. And of course, he only joins a couple of other coaches. Toe Blake, Scotty Bowman, and Tommy Ivan are the only three coaches other than Paul Maurice to have coached a team into three consecutive Stanley Cup finals.
Wow.
Pretty amazing, isn't it?
It's incredible. Yeah, it really is. And with him, for me, when I watch him and when we get a chance to talk to him, it doesn't happen to a guy like Paul Maurice. He's worked for it, but you know what I mean when I say it couldn't happen to a better guy.
Well, absolutely. And here's something else. Again, things you think about in the heat of the moment. Paul Maurice goes over to Rod Brind'Amour as the teams are shaking hands, and he was asked what on earth they were talking about there, and here's what he said.
It's a personal belief, and I really appreciate what he did because I understand the risk, that there's a bit of a risk. So the story goes like this. I don't believe that the coaches should shake players' hands at the end. I don't. There's this long list of people in suits and tracksuits. I mean, we had like 400 people on the ice. They're all really important to our group, but not one of them was in the game. There's something for me visually with the camera on of just the men who played, who block shots, who fought for each other. It's the end of one season. It's excitement for the other. The last thing that a player on the Carolina Hurricanes deserves is 50 more guys in suits they have. They have no idea who they are. And that's not a negative. There should be something really kind of beautiful about just the camera on those men who played shaking hands. And we should respect that. So we talked to Craig Berube on the ice in Toronto, and I figured if I could sell it in Toronto, and he understood it because he's played, and Roddy's played, so they both kind of get it. I don't know where it changed. When I first got in the league, you would never go shake the players. Now, some coach wanted to get on camera. It's the only thing I can figure out, right? And maybe you want to shake Wayne Gretzky's hand or something. I don't know when it changed, but I don't think it's right. I think there's a really nice, kind of beautiful part of our game when just the players shake hands at the end. When you think of all the wars, that's not the right word, all the great competitions on the ice, I mean, hard, going after each other, and yet they shake hands like that. That's special. I mean, they're not sending Christmas cards to each other. This was nasty out there. Something very special to it. So I appreciate the risk that he took because he's concerned that somebody here is going to be upset that he didn't shake our players' hands. I asked him not to. And he said, and he understood it. So that's what happened.
You know how great that was?
It's interesting, right? I've been on the bench for two elimination games with the San Jose Sharks, and I don't even remember coaches. Then I don't even think we shook the other coaches' hands. We just got off the bench and went.
Or it happened so underneath the stands.
Right. Well, yeah, that was Scotty Bowman in Detroit. Joe Louis-Arena came around underneath the stands, talked to Kevin, which I thought was a really tremendous moment. But we didn't think about going on the ice, if I remember correctly. The other aspect is that it is about the players. And again, once again, Paul Maurice articulates it perfectly and points the focus where it should be. Ray Ferraro, great broadcaster on ESPN here up in with the Vancouver Canucks as well. He was on a podcast yesterday. He said he disagreed. If you're a coach and you're on the bench during the game, the players know who you are. And if you want to, you should be able to go out and shake the hands. But again, I don't think there's any wrong answer here. I don't think if you do it one way or the other, it's a bad thing. Because I go back to Peter DeBoer and the moment he shared with Mark Scheifele after Winnipeg was eliminated when Scheifele's father had passed away that day. And it was a beautiful moment, and a moment that showed that life is still bigger than the game of hockey. So I think that was the right moment for Peter DeBoer as well. So I don't think any coach is wrong on deciding what they want to do, because if you're on the bench and you're in the game and you're going, you go shake the hands, I think it's a sign of respect as well. But I think both viewpoints are correct.
Well, that's why I said it was so great, because it's another perspective. And certainly it's what the handshake is all about in many respects. And that is, again, I use that word respect a lot. These players don't really want to shake hands with each other after they battled so hard all that time, especially the team that lost. However,
yes,
it's respect for the game, and it's respect for the history of the Stanley Cup, and it's for the love of the game, and it's all of that to say, I acknowledge the fact that this was quite a series, and I'm respecting the fact that you won, even though I don't like it. And to me, you know what I think, by the way, it started with all the coaches starting to shake hands?
Yeah.
I think it might have been when Scotty Bowman won the Stanley Cup for the last time, and he was out there and the guys were shaking hands with him, might have been right around that time, maybe. For some reason, that's what I thought of when I heard Paul Maurice talking about that.
You know, you might be right, because remember his last one, he put his skates on and skated around with it, because he always—
that's what I'm talking— yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you might be right on that one.
And so after that, it just sort of changed. So it wasn't so much that Scotty necessarily wanted to be on camera. I just think he felt that this, after what the greatest coaching career in history, he felt that he had earned it, and boy, did he ever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can't argue with what Scotty had been able to accomplish, without a doubt. Get the carte blanche to do whatever you want.
Well, after this game was over, Rod Brind'Amour was talking about what his team had gone through, and he had a couple of comments that I think are definitely notable. Number one, is there an unwavering belief in his system, in everything that he's done that's been so successful for this team, and every time they've fallen just short, is now a time for a change? And here's what he said about Florida, more than him.
They're the standard now, and... I see out, in, forecheck, hard, wait for your chance, try to capitalize. I mean, it's hard hockey. If anything, we got to figure out how to get that much to our game. But that's the standard right there. And I mean, I feel like that's been our game for a long time. They've kind of picked it up the last couple of years and made it that much better. So that's what we got to get.
This was really interesting, Drew. I think this is the most interesting clip that he had. And that is talking about balancing the disappointment with losing again in the conference final to being proud of what his team has actually accomplished with all the challenges they had, with the trades they made, the changes to the roster, some of the other challenges that the Hurricanes had all year.
Thank you. That works into like, it's the craziest thing that we're this far, and it's all over here is negativity from everybody. And it's, when I walked this summer and with the pieces that were left this organization, I was like, I don't think we're making playoffs. I was that worried about it, because it was such a mass exodus of good players to free agency. And then we were able to find good players to fill in. And then I was like, I don't know if they're that good, but they hung in there. So I got nothing but pride with this group. And you know, yeah, we didn't love how this kind of went this series, but again, that's the standard right there. That's, you're not giving Florida enough credit.
Well, we know Alex Ovechkin's coming back next season. Some of the miscues in the media, notwithstanding the last 24 hours with his so-called last year that a ticket person sent out accidentally. But Brent Burns, 40 years of age, got that far once again, and the question is, will he be back?
That's a very good question. I think because of the tremendous condition he's in and how much he loves to play the game and how much he loves to be around the team, I think that there will be more than one or two teams interested in securing him. I'm not sure if Carolina will be. He'll take a cut in pay because he is 40 years old. But when you watched him play in this playoffs, he did not look out of place. He did not look slow. He was still a huge member of that defense court. Now you get to play with Jacob Slavin, your game's going to be very, very different playing with somebody who's not as talented. But overall, I do think that Brent will still play.
I agree with you. I think these guys love the game so much, and for lack of a better way of putting it, they don't know what else to do.
Exactly. 100%. You're absolutely right. They don't know what else to do. Their whole lives have been this, being told where to go, what to do, what time to be there, and then just go play hockey. And I remember Joe Thornton talking about it. It's and Scott Thornton as well. When they were coming out of the room after a game or even going out before the game, they'd be laughing, thinking to themselves, where else can I do this? You can't, where else can you act like this? Being like one of the boys in the room, having that much fun playing a game for a living. You don't get to do it anywhere else. As Nico Sturm always says, every day in the NHL is a good day.
Every day indeed. And for the Florida Panthers, it's the third consecutive trip to the Stanley Cup final, and they'll try to defend their title against Edmonton.
We continue now with the Sharks playoff report on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Well, we spent a lot of time with the Eastern Conference. Now let's talk about the Western Conference. The Dallas Stars gave it their absolute all, but were not able to finish off the Edmonton Oilers, who are on their way back to the Stanley Cup final series. And Drew, it's only a handful of times in the last number of years that we've seen two teams play against each other two consecutive years in the Stanley Cup final. The last time it happened, of course, was Detroit and Pittsburgh back in 08 and 09. One team won 1 year, one team won the other year. And I remember the Islanders and the Edmonton Oilers playing a couple of years in a row, but only a couple of times here in the last few decades.
Yeah, you bring up Pittsburgh, Detroit. That's what's popped into my mind right away. And we remember that unreal save Marc-Andre Fleury makes it against Nick Lidstrom in the deciding game in the dying seconds that would have tied the game up. So you look at that, there was such great drama. It was, you know, so much to talk about. A great team in the Detroit Red Wings with so many wonderful players. And then Sidney Crosby and his team with the Pittsburgh Penguins, so much to talk about. There was so, it was such a great series. And this one is shaping up to be a wonderful series as well. So many terrific players and two really good teams.
Well, the deciding game was a 6-3 victory by the Edmonton Oilers, and it really wasn't a 6-3 game until the very end. In fact, it started out with a guy that scored a lot of playoff goals, Corey Perry, putting it into the net.
And whacked by CeCe, throws it around the boards. Drysdale, poised as can be, maintains the puck. He and McDavid are the top two scorers, and the centering pass is flipped home by Corey Perry. The setup from McDavid, Perry finishes, and at age 40, Corey Perry has 7 playoff goals, and Edmonton takes a 1-0 lead in game 5.
Well, how about that? Corey Perry's 40 years of age. We just talked about Brent Burns. We've talked about Alex Ovechkin, and here's another guy that's been around forever.
Danny, they put a stat up on Sportsnet here 2 games ago. Teams that have played the longest, most playoff games in the last number of years, the San Jose Sharks, the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Florida Panthers, and Corey Perry had all of the teams beat as an individual. Corey Perry, as of last game, 231 playoff games in the last, what I think was like, can't remember the last number of years, but Corey Perry was beating teams as far as participation in the Stanley Cup playoffs. As much as you can't stand the guy when he plays against you, and especially Sharks fans, Sharks broadcasters, we can't stand the guy because he's so damn good.
Because he's such a pain in the neck. He's difficult to play against. And he always seems to be in the right place at a critical moment when you really want him to be hiding or on the bench. And that was a good example of that first goal. I mean, it was just a nice play in front, got passes from McDavid and Draisaitl, and banged it in and put the Oilers in front. But the goal that everybody's talking about is this one.
And nudge free to hits. One-timer ripped and blocked by Ekholm. That'll lead to a breakaway for Connor McDavid. He's in and he scores! Connor McDavid drags it back to his forehand. And Edmonton has regained a 2-goal lead in Game 5. Block shot, Ekholm, McDavid, the finish at the other end.
Let's not forget about Ekholm being back in and healthy. That's critical for the Oilers in the final. But McDavid with that separation speed and then that little extra move. Not many players can really do that, Drew.
Not at that speed with somebody behind you. That was the game because Dallas Stars fought back. They were down early, 3-0. They fought back, got close, and again, couldn't get the next one. Couldn't get the next one. And then they did it again early in the third period. And there was bang, lots of excitement, all kinds of things going on. And now the Dallas Stars are back. They're right in at 30 seconds into the third. And then 97 takes over. And that was the game.
One of the big stories, though, was that the first two shots that Edmonton took, one by Corey Perry that you heard was in the back of the net. And it was an interesting kind of an exchange there when Pete DeBoer decided to pull goaltender Jake Oettinger and put in Casey DeSmith. And he was asked about that postgame.
Well, anytime you pull a goalie, you know, the reasoning's always to try and spark your group. So that was the number one reason. We had talked endlessly in this series about trying to play with the lead. And obviously we were in a 2-0 hole right away. And you know what, I didn't take that lightly and I didn't blame it all on Jake. But, you know, the reality is if you go back to last year's playoffs, you know, he's lost 6 to 7 games to Edmonton. And we gave up 2 shots on 2 goals in a, you know, an elimination game. So, you know, it was partly to spark our team and wake them up. And partly, you know, knowing that, you know, status quo had not been working, you know, and that's a pretty big sample size.
That was quite a statement, wasn't it?
It very much was. And he's getting criticized all over the place on sports media, hockey, so-called experts saying that it was a bad move. It was an angry pull and blah, 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 blah. But when you listen to Pete DeBoer there, he explains it very well. And that's the first goal. I was okay. Okay. You understand he's right in front of the net and boom, it's Corey Perry. The second goal, he being Oettinger, was left himself so wide open and he played that the breakaway kind of what it was, but it wasn't a much of a move. Was it Janmark that scored?
Yes.
So he makes, Janmark doesn't even make a move. He comes in, slides to the left, to his forehand side. Oettinger's got the paddle. He goes down on the butterfly, wide open 5 holes, got his paddle up off the ice, and he's got nothing but space between his legs. And it's an easy goal. That's what you need. In the playoffs, you needed that stop. In the playoffs, you had to make that stop if you're Oettinger. You're giving that guy 8.5 next year. You're supposed to be the goalie. I had no problem with Peter DeBoer after he explained it, and he's absolutely right. What's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. You weren't getting the results from Oettinger. Oettinger's save percentage, I do believe, was .875 in this series. You had to do something. It's the elimination game, and you know that the other team probably better than you, and they're playing better than you. You needed stops from Oettinger. The Oilers sure as hell got them from Skinner. And so I had no problem, and I have no problem defending Peter DeBoer on that pull.
No, and obviously, DeSmith comes in, gives up a goal early, but then right away, Dallas scores. They get their game back. They fight hard to the end. And, you know, had this been Mike Keenan coaching instead of Pete DeBoer, they might have put Oettinger back in after a couple of shifts. But that's another story. But I just thought it was exactly. Really, really well stated by Pete DeBoer exactly why he did something. And I thought it was refreshing that he would be that forthcoming and that honest with everybody in that situation. Now, on to the final.
Agreed.
Why are the Edmonton Oilers better this year than last year? I'll let Connor McDavid tell us.
Well, I think we were better for going through last year. You know, it was a great learning experience, and it's really driven us all year. I think this run has felt different than last year. It's felt very normal. It's felt very... I don't want to say boring because it's not boring at all, but just a little, you know, it hasn't been as emotional. You know, we haven't had the highs and we haven't had the lows, just kind of been steady, you know, and I think that's put us in a good position, you know. Those games can be emotionally draining. We're not drained. As referenced, we've got lots of depth. You know, we've got as good a chance as they do.
He also said something else. He said, we're prepared for this, and we've been prepared since the start of training camp. And I think that's another angle that you have to take with the Oilers being better prepared for the final.
They approached it with more humility this year than last year. Last year, remember, they lost to, they had in the, wasn't even the conference finals. And they were, next year, cover bus, cover bus, cover bus, cover bus. and they approached it with too much arrogance. This year, they approached the whole season with humility. They had ups and downs. They overcame some obstacles. They are more hardened in competition than they were the last couple of years. I'm looking forward to this series, Danny. I think it's going to be an unreal, competitive, tough, hard to play against game that, like Rod Brindamore talked about, the standard's been set by these two teams.
We'll see how it all plays out. June the 4th is game number one. June the 20th, if needed, will be game number seven. That's it for our show today.
You've been listening to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. This has been a presentation of the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.